First-time novelist Jessica Townsend was astonished to find herself in the middle of a publishing bidding war for her book Nevermore. She'd spent a decade or so quietly, even secretly, writing her fantasy novel about a girl destined to die on her 11th birthday. Instead, the girl, Morrigan Crowe, is saved by a secret benefactor, whisked away into a new and magical republic where she lives in a fabulous hotel with a talking cat. Jessica Townsend spoke to Kate Evans, but first, let's hear a little of the beginning from that book, Nevermore.
Chapter 1, The Cursed Crow, Winter of 11, 3 days earlier. The kitchen cat was dead and Morrigan was to blame. She didn't know how it had happened or when. She thought perhaps he'd eaten something poisonous overnight. There were no injuries to suggest a fox or dog attack. Apart from a bit of dried blood at the corner of his mouth, he looked like he was sleeping, but he was cold and stiff. When she found his body in the weak winter morning light, Morrigan crouched down beside him in the dirt, a frown creasing her forehead. She stroked his black pelt from the top of his head to the tip of his bushy tail. "Sorry, kitchen cat," she murmured. Morrigan thought about where best to bury him and whether she could ask grandmother for a bit of nice linen to wrap him in. Probably best not to, she decided. She'd use one of her own nightshirts. Cook opened the back door to give yesterday's scraps to the dogs and was so startled by Morrigan's presence she nearly dropped her bucket. The old woman peered down at the dead cat and set her mouth in a line. "Better his woe than mine, praise be to the divine," she muttered, knocking on the wooden doorframe and kissing the pendant she wore around her neck. She glanced sideways at Morrigan. "I liked that cat." "So did I," said Morrigan. "Oh yes, I can see that." There was a bitter note in her voice, and Morrigan noticed she was backing away inch by wary inch. "Go on now, inside. They're waiting for you in his office." Morrigan hurried into the house, hovering for a moment near the door from the kitchen to the hallway. She watched Cook take a piece of chalk and write, "Kitchen cat, dead," on the blackboard, at the end of a long list that most recently included spoiled fish, old Tom's heart attack, floods in North Prosper, and gravy stains on best tablecloth.
Jessica Townsend reading from Nevermore, The Trials of Morrigan Crowe. Jessica, hello.
Hello.
So this young hero of yours, Morrigan, what is she, a cat killer?
Apparently. Bit of a bleak opening, yeah. She is most certainly not a cat killer, but she does get blamed for a lot of things going wrong in her world.
Why is that?
So Morrigan was born on the wrong day, basically. She was born on a day which means that she's cursed, and so she's grown up sort of being blamed for everything that goes wrong in her family and in her town of Jackalfax. So, you know, bad weather events, and a young boy loses a spelling bee and an old man has a heart attack, and Morrigan gets the blame for everything. And so she sort of grows up, you know, writing apology letters every month, and as part of that curse, she also knows that she's going to die on a certain day.
So when we meet her, she's about 11 years old. Mm-hmm. What has her life been like living with all this blame?
Well, I think, you know, she's in a family who it's kind of that typical sort of child protagonist of the, you know, the unloved child. She lives in this family that kind of resents her, and she's sort of a blight. She's an embarrassment to her family, especially because her father is an important politician in this world. And so she's grown up sort of isolated. She hasn't grown up going to school with other children because she presents she's this perceived threat. And so she's grown up with sort of this very adult, pragmatic mentality of, you know, well, she's used to dealing with grown ups. She's not used to kind of connecting with children on that level. And she has this pragmatic attitude of like, well, you know, I know I'm going to die. I know I'm to blame for all of these things. But having said that, there's something innate in her where she has this kind of logic that's fighting against that, and she kind of rebels against the idea that she could possibly be to blame for, you know, a flood that happened thousands of miles from where she is. And so in a way, she's kind of she has this inner voice that is the lone sane voice amongst all these mad adults who use her as a scapegoat.
And we see that spark and that inner voice as she has to write apology letters to all the people who've failed in their spelling bee or their cake didn't rise or whatever. Yeah. And so it's important to you that she has that spark?
It is, because, you know, as much as you have this, you know, downtrodden child, there also has to be something, you know, endemic to her that is, she is the heroine of her own story. And, you know, she has to have that fight to get, she has very conflicting views about her place in the world, because she has been conditioned to blame herself for everything, but then also she is fighting against that. And that's kind of what, you know, when she's given, when she travels to Nevermore and she's given this second chance at life, she grabs it, because there's something in her that knows, you know, no, actually I'm worthy of carving out my place in the world.
So, Jessica, it's only very briefly at the beginning of this novel of yours that Morrigan is living in this particular world, and there's the hunt of death, basically, mm-hmm. is coming to chase her, and she's saved by this mysterious benefactor, Jupiter North. What does he offer her?
Jupiter is this kind of strange, funny, unusual adult who is the opposite of everything that Morrigan has come to expect from adults. And he does offer her life, essentially, you know, because she's known that her life is ending on a certain day. And he comes and says, well, he literally says to her, don't you want to live? Like, who says that your life has to end now? And so he whisks her away to this secret city called Nevermore. And it is, I mean, it's kind of everything that she never dared to dream of. It's a magical new world, and, you know, she is offered the chance to compete in trials to join an organization called the Wondrous Society, which is a society of people, children and adults, who are extraordinary people who all have some kind of special talent or a knack, that they call it in this world. And so he is offering her not just life, but the most wonderful, magical, privileged new life that she could have imagined. But, you know, she doesn't have a talent, so that's the catch.
So this is where your imagination takes us as readers, into this fantasy world and this city of Nevermore. Now, can I say that it was a relief to read a fantasy world that was a republic rather than another one that's very hierarchical and ruled by kings and queens?
Yeah, I've never been really interested in creating some kind of feudal system.
There is a lot of it in fantasy, though.
And I wanted to create something that felt like it could be very real to me. You know, like, a lot of Nevermore is based on London. I traveled to London in my early 20s and lived there for a little while. And so I wanted to create a world that was fantastical and ridiculous, but also I could see a lot of my own experience in it. So there was kind of no point to me in creating a world and a political system that I didn't recognize or that I couldn't imagine living in that world. You know, it kind of had to, all these absurdities had to be grounded in something that felt real to me.
So what is it then that shapes this world? I mean, you mentioned this society of wonder, and it's spelt W-U-N-D-E-R. Yes. What is this force?
So it's very, in this first book, it is deliberately kept quite mysterious. So you have, you know, even Jupiter North, who is the wise mentor, and he's the one who's drip feeding the information, and he's very, very smart and quite mysterious and knows a lot. It's almost mysterious to him in a way as well. So in the same way that I couldn't explain to you, I'm sure there are plenty of people who did basic high school science could, but I could not explain to you how electricity works. you know, I'm sure there are plenty of people in this fictional world who, they don't know how wonder works. It's sort of a mystery, but the essential idea is that it is the life force that kind of, that this whole world is run on. You know, it's the basis of all their infrastructure and their public transport, and it can be a force for good, and it can also be a big threat.
I'm curious, though, that because this is fantasy, you have spread your imaginative wings and you can go anywhere with your imagination that you want. Given that you are an Australian writer, mm-hmm. I was a bit surprised when it was snowing at Christmas time.
Yeah.
I mean, it does also feel quite English. Why?
Yeah, it's very, I mean, it has very kind of English sensibilities, this book. It's because, for a couple of reasons, I mean, I grew up watching a lot of English television, reading a lot of English children's books, you know, and so I feel like that has influenced my sense of humour. And but then also quite a lot of this book was written when I was in my early 20s and I'd moved to London. And so Nevermore, I mean, it's more or less of a fictional version of London. It's, you know, in really specific ways, like there's this, you know, public transport system called the Wonderground, which is essentially the London Underground, but slightly more magical. And
involving an umbrella. A wonderful umbrella.
There's also the Brolly Rail. And that also came directly from my experience in London, because the day that I moved to London, I was staying with my friend Laura, and she gave me a gift, and it was an umbrella. And she said, well, you live in London now, you're going to need this, which essentially is a scene that made it into the book. Jupiter hands Morrigan an umbrella and it says, you know, you'll need this. And I just, that came from the fact that I had never lived anywhere where, you know, as I'm leaving my house, I'm like, okay, keys, wallet, umbrella. Like, you just don't really leave the house without an umbrella in London. And so I thought, well, that would be an interesting way to kind of, you know, make that an integral part of the Nevermore experience, is everyone has an umbrella and you travel through the city using the Brolly Rail.
There are all sorts of quite familiar elements in this story. So there's a child alone, there's a quest, there's all sorts of alliances that start to be made. There's a talking cat called Fen. I guess that's not necessarily part of the familiar bit. There is a quite serious threat from the past. So I'm interested in the bookshelf that shaped this novel of yours, because the name Nevermore sort of hinted at Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere, which is also set in London. Harry Potter gets a letter at the age of 11. And so I wonder what the bookshelf is that sits behind this novel of yours.
It's funny that you mentioned Neverwhere, because I've been writing this book for such a long time. It took probably about 10 years to write, and I was writing it all while I was living in London as well. And I actually remember the day I was in Waterstones on Piccadilly, and I saw this Neil Gaiman book on the shelf. And I think it might have actually been the first Neil Gaiman book I ever read. And I picked it up, and it was called Neverwhere, and it was about sort of a secret city beneath a city. And I had already been writing this book. It was already called Nevermore. And I had this like just sudden shock of fear. I'm like, I'm going to have to change everything about my book. Like I had no idea. It was a pure coincidence. But yeah, no, I love Neil Gaiman. I do have Neil Gaiman books on my shelf. Obviously, I mean, I think that Nevermore kind of wears its influences right there on the page. I grew up reading Harry Potter. I love those books. It's not anything that I ever shy away from. Like it's of course it's been a huge influence on me. There are recognizable sort of tropes or themes in this book, and I think that those are really useful shortcuts into a fantasy world. Like I don't think that it's a bad thing to use familiar tropes. And also it just also gives you the chance to subvert them and use them in unexpected ways. It's a way to kind of have readers feel like, well, this is, I understand this, I can recognize this, I've come to this before. It's a shortcut into the story, and then the story can sort of take its own journey in a different direction.
How far is this character going to take you? So we meet her and she's almost 12.
Yeah, so I mean, my hope at the moment, it's a like I have a 3-book deal, it's a trilogy, but in my mind I would like to write 9 books, and I have them, I've quite a lot of it plotted out. So my general idea is that Morrigan gets older with every book, so she's probably going to age, it's going to follow her. I'm hoping that she will, what will she, that will make her what, 18, 19 when the books are finished.
So yeah, do you expect your style to change? Do you expect to be grappling with different issues as she becomes a young woman?
Absolutely, yeah. The way that I've kind of plotted it out, it's almost like it's a 3-act structure. I'm almost thinking of it as 3 trilogies in a way. You know, but it is still the one story. There's an overall arc. But yeah, of course she will change and develop. And actually, you know, when Morrigan first sort of came to me as a character, she was an adult. It was a story about a little girl who was going to live with her aunt Morrigan, and this aunt Morrigan was, you know, this eccentric woman who is very bold and funny and magical, and she was so much more interesting than her niece that I started kind of thinking, who is this woman? What was she like as a child? How did she come to be this way? And so, like, I know the character that she is on her way to becoming, and you know, putting her in Nevermore and putting her up against all of these dangers, it's like, well, for her to become this courageous, peculiar woman, I had to put her in this peculiar place and throw danger at her head. So I know what she's on her way to becoming, more or less.
Jessica, thank you so much for speaking to us about Nevermore here on RN.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Writer Jessica Townsend speaking there to Kate Evans. And Nevermore, book one in the Trials of Morrigan Crowe, is published by Lothian.